The journey from Jerusalem to Golgotha is not very far in miles. And for a person who was strong and rested, it would be little more than just a pleasant stroll. But Jesus was neither strong nor rested. He had been harassed all night long by the Jewish and Roman authorities. He had been scourged by the Roman soldiers until he was bloodied and weak. Add to this the burden of carrying a heavy cross upon his back, and the situation soon becomes one that is both exhausting and debilitating. Through the years, the artists have portrayed Jesus as falling down under this heavy load as he made this short journey. And they are probably right. But as Jesus was going out of Jerusalem, Simon of Cyrene was coming in. Very little is known about the life of this man Simon, except that he was from a city in North Africa that had a very large Jewish population. He was probably in Jerusalem to attend the Passover festival. But as he came upon the procession headed for Calvary, he was seized by the Roman soldiers and forced to carry Jesus' cross. He actually had nothing to do with the crucifixion. He just happened along at that particular moment. And surely Simon must have asked, "Why me? Out of all the people that was there, why me? Why was I selected? Why was this heavy cross laid upon my back? Why wasn't someone else chosen instead of me?" Well, people through the ages have continued to ask such questions. Basically, this was the answer that Moses gave to God when he was called at the burning bush in Midian. When God told Moses to leave the peaceful land of Midian and go back to Egypt and lead his children out of bondage back to the promised land, this is basically what Moses said. "Why me, Lord? Why are you choosing me? Why not someone else? I'm a nobody. I'm nobody. I'm not even a good speaker. Please, Lord, please send somebody else." And when God told Jonah to go to Nineveh, in essence, this is what Jonah said. "Why me, Lord? Why should I go to Nineveh? Why not someone else?" And he felt so strongly about the matter that he attempted to run away from God. He thought if he left the land of Palestine that he would be able to escape from God. But neither Moses nor Jonah escaped. Crosses were laid upon both of them, crosses that were not of their own choosing. And though Moses continued to carry on a running debate with God, he accepted his cross of service and committed his life to carry out the task to which he had been called. But Jonah, not so Jonah. Jonah never did. He went to Nineveh, but he went under duress. And the last that we see of him, he's seated on a hillside looking over the city of Nineveh, venting his anger and frustration and rage at God and the people of Nineveh. Why me, Lord? Why me? Why not someone else? Not only does God place a heavy cross of service upon us at times, but life itself lays upon us crosses of trouble and tragedy, and seemingly without rhyme and without reason. In one of my former parishes, there was a young lady who had spent most of her life in our children's home in Denton, Texas. She had lost both of her parents at a very early age. Then, following her marriage, she lost her first three children, either through miscarriages or stillbirths. And then finally, the fourth child, a little boy, lived. And she was expecting her fifth child when her young husband was killed in an automobile accident. A drunken driver hit the car in which he was riding head on, and he was killed immediately. About 2 months later, she gave birth to their baby, a baby that lived only a few hours. And as I visited this young mother in the hospital, following the graveside service for her young baby, as a young pastor, I had few words of wisdom to offer. All of this had happened. The loss of both parents, the loss of her husband, the loss of four children, and she was still in her 20s. Not even 30 years of age. I don't remember much that she said to me that day, but I do remember her asking, "What have I done? What have I done that all of these things have happened in my life? What wrong? What wrong have I done that all of these bad things have happened to me?" In another former parish, a young woman forewent marriage and a family of her own to help raise and educate her brothers and sisters. She was from a large family. She was a highly qualified public school teacher and librarian, and a very committed layperson in her church. While in her mid-30s, she was stricken with a crippling form of arthritis. She underwent surgery for this more than 10 times but was still an invalid and a shut-in. She once said to me, "I have not known a day. I have not known a single day during the last 16 years when I have been free from pain." She died a few years ago, still an invalid and still experiencing almost constant physical pain. Fortunately, these are somewhat rare cases. But the questions and the doubts that they raise are not rare. Most of us wonder at times why life has placed some heavy burden upon us. And certainly I have no answer for any given case, any particular case. I do not know why Simon is chosen and others are simply passed by. But I do know that some people have burdens that are almost impossible for them to bear. I do know, however, that while this is true of some people, that most of us tend to overemphasize the heaviness of our own burden. We have a tendency to look around at other people and say that, you know, their lives are easier than mine. Sometimes this is the case, of course. But frequently this is not the case. Oftentimes what we see in other people's lives is just a facade. A facade that hides all of the anxiety and the hurt and the pain that lie behind it. I'm not suggesting that life brings an equal amount of pain and suffering and trials and troubles to every person, because certainly this is not the case. And things don't always even out over the course of a lifetime. There are times when we can legitimately ask, "Why me, Lord? Why me? Why are you asking me to bear this heavy cross of service? Or why have you allowed life to place this tremendous burden upon me?" But on the other hand, there are even more times when most of us with justification could ask, "Why not me, Lord? Why George or Joe or Mary instead of me?" As I've said, I don't have an answer as to why some are chosen to carry heavy burdens, to bear heavy crosses, while others are simply passed by. But over a period of many years, I have observed that more often than not, it is those persons who have undergone a considerable amount of suffering in which true greatness bud and flower. In 1955, a young girl who was a native of Hiroshima, Japan, died of leukemia. some 2 or 3 months after I read this story, Cornelia or someone read it, because the CPW carried this in some of their programming. But this young Japanese girl was a belated victim of the nuclear bomb that was dropped on her city. And as she lay in her hospital bed, she well could have asked, "Why am I dying at the age of 12? Why was I chosen to die so young? Why was my city chosen and other cities in my country passed by? A bomb was not dropped upon them. Why was I born in Hiroshima, Japan? Why not in Alexandria, Egypt, or Cali, Colombia, or Chicago, or Baltimore, or Los Alamos in the United States? Why Hiroshima?" Her questioning, her doubts, her fears could have driven this young girl into a crippling depression and hatred for those who dropped the bomb, who caused her illness, to have blinded her to the very existence of love and peace. But instead of succumbing to the paralysis of doubt and fear, this young lady set out to fold 1,000 paper cranes. Cranes being a symbol of peace in the Japanese culture. It was her desire to send these paper cranes into the world as messengers of peace. When she had completed 644, she died of her leukemia. Her classmates in school folded the remaining 356. And after her death, a Japanese poet told her story in verse. And he ended his poem with these words: "You yourself must fold the 645th. You must fold all of the other paper cranes. Never let their fluttering wings be still. Never let them die. But see them winging and winging and winging." To be human is to question. There certainly is nothing wrong with raising questions or even expressing anger and bitterness to God. God is not shocked by our display of humanness. God is not turned off by any sincere expression of anger, bitterness, or doubt. God is not indifferent to our concerns, to our doubts, and to our questions. But we must remember that our answers do not always come in the shape or size or texture or color that we want or expect. God answers in His own time and in His own manner. Our answers are always answers of thanks. They are more intuitive and existential than they are intellectual or rational. We must act in faith even in the midst of our doubt. We must continue to fold our paper cranes, send into the world our messages of hope and peace and love, even though our own lives at times are flooded by questions and by doubts. And whether we finish 50 or 644 doesn't really matter. This is not the crucial issue. Someone will carry on in our stead. As we have already suggested, there is nothing wrong with having a running debate with God. Certainly Moses did almost all of his life. In periods of discouragement and depression and doubt are not abnormal in the Christian's life. Not abnormal in the Christian's life. But I say again, we must act on our faith and not on our doubts. Lord, we believe, help our unbelief, must ever be our prayer. Assurance is a part of the doing. And many times the assurance that we want and seek comes only in retrospect, only after we have begun to act in faith rather than giving way to our doubts. And let us not be prisoners of impatience. God does not wear a Rolex or even a Timex. And neither does God conduct his affairs on Central Standard or Central Daylight Time. But to those who continue to listen, to those who keep the faith even when times are dark, God will always speak. God will always speak. And his words will be the words of life. His words will be the words of life.